So a life that's whole, W-H-O-L-E, a life that's whole has room for everything. For success and failure, for birth and death, for celebration and for grief. A whole life is a life that has room for enough room for us, enough room so that we can grieve our losses, whatever they are. Lost loved ones, lost jobs, lost opportunities, lost relationships, lost youth, lost health. You could extend the list yourself, I'm sure. Lots of turbulence, of course, in our national news recently. Politically, we might grieve the loss of kindness and a sense of togetherness in the American public. I've heard that from lots of people. But today, I do want to focus a bit more locally here in our own community because we're grieving the news we received this week about a different kind of loss, the loss of our hospital. And I want to come back to that in just a minute. And in fact, I'll invite you to share a little bit about what's flowing through your heart and mind as you process that news this week. But first, a little bit about Job and our other reading. One of the powerful questions raised by this amazing book of Job concerns whether we will trust God when things go wrong. Will we continue to practice our faith in God if all the signs of God's blessing are removed from our lives? If we lose our jobs, if we struggle financially, if we experience a divorce, if we lose a loved one, if we're forced to deal with disappointment, in all those tough situations, will we hang in there? This is the drama that's set up in the opening scene of the book of Job. The Satan, or the accuser, the prosecuting attorney, suggests that Job only serves God because Job's life is full, because his life is awash in all kinds of blessings. I wonder whether Job would continue to serve you, the accuser asks God, if all the blessings of his life were taken away. That question, I think, hits most of us square in the solar plexus. Most of us have, at one time or another, imagined our lives with God as a kind of exchange or bargain of some sort. I will serve God, we reason, and then in return God will provide for me a relatively safe and comfortable life. I'll put my trust in God, I'll offer myself to God, and in exchange, God will then shield me from harm, protect me from pain and suffering. And yet, Job's story shows us the possibility of a different kind of life without the bargaining. Job shows us a kind of fidelity to God that is strong enough to survive even all the losses, all the bad news that come our way during the course of life. Job may be the hero of that story, but it is Jesus Christ who is the pioneer of our salvation. According to Hebrews, he's no mere angel. That category of angel isn't big enough, isn't rich or complex enough to express who Jesus Christ is for us. Christ is the radiance of God, through whom the whole universe was created and through whom everything is now sustained. This Son of God took on flesh and bone to live in solidarity with us mere mortals. He lived a truly human life as Jesus of Nazareth, even suffering death for our sakes. It is this meek and lowly Jesus who is the pioneer of our salvation. And his death was not the end for him or for us. God crowned him with glory and honor, we're told, and now we are those who follow the pioneer. Like him, we too face suffering and death. But our pioneer has gone ahead of us. He has already tasted death for us, and the good news for us is that in all of our suffering, we are not those who have been forgotten by God. We are the very brothers and sisters of Jesus Christ. Now, I hope you hear these promises from both Testaments as encouraging good news for you and for me. God can be trusted in difficult times. And this week was one of those times for our community. We got news this week that Mercy Hospital is closing. That news affects everyone. It affects many hospital employees and their families. Several of those here in our own congregation, we pray with and for all those families and for the whole community. Anyone affected, we pray that God will sustain them in a time of uncertainty, uprooting, that God will provide for them. And beyond those specific families and their situations, our wider community grieves in a way of what amounts to a challenge to the future health and well-being of this place that we care about and love so much. So let me stop there for a minute, and I want to pause and see if you would be willing to share your response, your questions, your worries, your grief, whatever was swirling through your heart this week as you process this news. Larry. Okay. I'll try to repeat things that get said so you can hear it. Larry said a sense of frustration with the failure to expand Medicaid, which deeply affected the offering of rural health care in places like ours. Okay. What else? Linda's saying just jobs, the jobs that were lost, people that might have to leave. Okay. Leah said, I'm not sure I cut everything, the legacy of care through the Mercy system. Their presence of those employees in our community, right? Right. Okay. Gail just mentioned a kind of uncertainty. What services are going to be picked up by who? What parts are going to be around? What parts aren't going to be? Sure. A lot of uncertainty still at this point. Jackie says the anxiety, especially for older people who may have a harder time getting to other communities for the medical care that they need. Right. There has been a lot of talk about we travel and most people get treatment elsewhere. True, it's not easy for everyone to travel. Yep. What else? Jim, how this will affect the city? Is that... Yeah, how this news and what's going on with our healthcare system, how that will affect the city, the wider community, county too. Yeah, lots of unknowns. Emily is saying, we pray for sometimes as if just one in the family were an employee, but there are families in whom everybody worked for the Mercy system. And so complete sense of uprootedness for them, sure. Good, thank you for sharing a few things. I know there are other things you're feeling, and this might not be the scenario in which you feel comfortable saying them, and that's fine. Thank you for those of you who were able to share. I do think you named some of the things that are important to us that we're thinking about. I tried to do lots of listening this week. I needed to do lots of listening this week. And so the things I was hearing, let me put in three categories or under three themes. This may not catch everything. This may not be the best way to organize it, but it's how it sounded to me as I listened this week in conversation, social media, comments I saw on news articles. The first theme I noticed, I'll call premature optimism or premature comfort. This response to the bad news usually took the form of affirming that even when bad things happen, and this is a phrase I heard a lot this week, not against it, I'm for it, but it just came awful early. Don't worry, because God has a plan. God has a plan. To those who receive the news that they'll lose their job, a friend would console them, saying, God has a plan for you. To the wider community, confused, unsettled about this news, and several of you mentioned this, some have said, God has a plan for us. God still loves this community. Yes, of course. Of course, God has a plan for each family affected, and yes, God has a plan for our wider community. Sometimes when we're working at grief, it's not that we're saying the wrong thing, it's that we're saying it a little too soon. So that one, premature comfort. The second theme I'll call blaming or scapegoating. We do this when we grieve. We want someone to, we want it to land somewhere. I noticed several different groups were getting blamed. And again, I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm just listening and noticing what's happening. Poor people were blamed for using the hospital without insurance. Okay? The Mercy Health System was blamed for being profit hungry or not caring enough about the community. The residents of Fort Scott were blamed for going elsewhere for health care, on and on. And there might be some truth to all these claims, but when we have space for reflection, we can acknowledge that what has happened with Mercy Health System is the result of a cluster of extremely complex and interrelated factors. Changes in healthcare, technology, insurance, hospital ownership, the shift of jobs and people away from rural areas to cities, and lots of other things besides. So the question, why did this happen here? Why did this happen to us? Probably has no single simple answer. The third theme, Laura mentioned it with the kids, I'll call denial. It's understandable as an early stage response to grief. When we're in denial, we imagine a range of scenarios that serve to soften the sharpness of the bad news. And maybe we need to do that emotionally at first. Maybe the city can buy the hospital. Maybe another hospital system will buy the hospital. Maybe the community will figure out a new solution. Maybe it won't be so bad. Maybe everyone who lost a job will get another job just as good in a nearby community so they can keep their families here. Maybe the loss of the hospital won't have any long-term effect on the viability of our community. Maybe it's not as bad as it sounds. These emotional responses to loss are normal, they are healthy, and I hear them sort of emerging and being born out of a love of our community. So it's actually lovely. They emerge out of a deep sense of hope in the future of this place, that we will figure out a good way to move forward together. So they're normal and healthy, but they also function to kind of postpone the grieving, all these responses do. The reason I can name and describe a few of these themes or responses to the bad news is that I personally felt all of these things swirling in my own heart, in my own life. I felt the impulse to offer easy and premature comfort that God will take care of us. I felt the impulse to find someone to blame. I was tempted by denial. The problem with each of those responses isn't that they're wrong. The problem is that they all function to sort of block moving on down the road of grief. They all take a shortcut. They all try to avoid the need to feel down deep in our bones the sadness, the sorrow, the worry, and even the despair and the anger that's appropriate for people who've just received some tough news. Our hearts in situations like this, and of course I'm talking about Mercy Hospital, but I'm talking about grief and loss and disappointment more widely and in the more personal ways that we all experience it. Our hearts want to grieve. Our hearts need to grieve. Our souls crave honesty and freedom to feel, to really feel what it is that's coursing through us and needs to come to birth in us. So let me come back to this theme of wholeness. We've been talking for the past month or so about how to receive from God a life that's big enough to include both the highs and the lows. A life that can include stress and anxiety, uncertainty, things that we can't control. We want lives that can include periods of depression, times we don't feel the energy we'd like to have. Our lives will include sickness as well as health. Our lives need space to include anger at others who fail us, anger at situations that undercut our hopes for the future. and even anger at ourselves and anger at God sometimes. The good news of God's love for us in Jesus Christ does not mean that everything's going to be okay. No one ever promised us that everything would be okay. No one ever promised us that all the rough spots in our lives would be sanded smooth. I wish life were like that, but it's not. When Jesus invites us to follow him, he does not make that kind of false promise to us. The good news is that God's grace enables us to face the reality of our lives with honesty and resilience. God really can help us learn to let go of the dream of a perfect life so that we can welcome the life we actually have. Let me say that one more time. Part of what God's doing is helping us release our grip on some vision of the perfect life so that we can welcome and receive the life we actually have. God's grace can provide us with flexibility and playfulness, that quality of, that mood of life that we need to handle life's lows. When we wake up each day knowing that God's love for us and everyone else is the most real thing there is, we find the courage to keep moving forward. Bad news and painful experiences make our lives difficult, but they don't keep us down for long because we're people who've been caught up in this good news that we are deeply, unimaginably, radically loved by God in Jesus Christ from birth all the way to death. There's always life in the midst of death. The living God is always at work in all the seemingly dead places of our lives. There's always something growing in the soil of disappointment and loss. That's how our God works. And that's how those of us who confess the resurrection of Jesus Christ look to the future. We do so with hope. Today, we've talked a little bit about the kind of life that can include and perhaps even welcome grief and disappointment and loss. If you're here this morning and you're a young person, you may not have experienced many losses yet in life. But as all of us who are a little bit older know, as we get older, the losses mount. There's simply no path where we can avoid loss. Our only choice in life is whether we will grow bitter and angry, refusing to receive grief as part of our lives, or whether by God's grace we become supple, flexible, and creative enough to make room for grief as part of the life that God has given us to live.